just to try to see my way to you. It's gonna take a fist for dollars, or it just won't do. I need so much money, so much money.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday. It is the 29th of September, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock, and we welcome you to the program. We also welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. If you'd like to sound off on any of the things we're talking about this morning, you can do that. Panel at WAMC.org. We would love to hear from you. All right, let me introduce everybody and we'll get started. We've got a lot to talk about, of course, a lot going on, and we want to leave as much time as possible for that. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, fellow panelists. Good morning, peoples out there, wherever you are.
We missed you yesterday. It's nice you're back. Thank you.
And it's great to be here.
All right, let's go to Libby Post, political consultant and lobbyist. Good morning, Libby. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm glad to be back, too, so thank you very much.
It's wonderful. We missed you yesterday, of course, because of the holiday, and you're with us today, and we couldn't be more thrilled, so thank you very much. Former associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, and a little bit belated, congratulations on that extraordinary pre-fund drive
fund drive
goal reaching or whatever. Yeah.
We don't know what to call it either, Mike. It was just...
Yeah. But that is just outstanding. What an affirmation.
I just want to say we don't discern the congratulations. The people out there who understood it, and I, by the way, it's not just puff that I'm putting out there, because the fact of the matter is, in regular fund drives, we start at 6 in the morning, we end at 12 at night or 11 at night. Here, we just basically raised all that $1 million in the first 2 hours of the day. So it really is, you know, maybe a little bit later on, but it really is a decision on the part of the people who love the radio station. They were going to support it, and it didn't take much. It was all them.
Absolutely.
Well, indeed. We thank everyone very, very much. And we're back. We can talk about all of the stuff that's been going on here and a lot of stuff. Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Thank you for being with us. All right. Well, of course, yesterday the big story was over the president's taxes and the bombshell that the New York Times laid down on Sunday evening. Well, part two came out last night, more on the taxes. And all of this happens as there is a debate tonight. The first presidential debate takes place tonight. And obviously, it seems as though that the avoidance of the president to pay taxes will certainly shake up the debate, or at least we think so. President Trump heads into his and Joe Biden's first debate already on defense as he fights off attacks stemming from a damning report that he avoided federal taxes for years and has racked up more than $400 million in debt, potentially putting his family-run business on shaky ground. With Trump's campaign hoping the first meeting between the two candidates Tuesday might help him overcome his deficit in both national and key state polls, the New York Times report documenting Trump's tax avoidance strategies became the latest impediment to the president's ongoing effort to revive his flagging reelection bid. The report gave Biden, his Democratic opponent, a fresh line of attack and left Trump struggling to defend himself on an issue that has dogged him throughout his presidency. Again, the debate is tonight. We will be airing it here, of course, live on WAMC. And so, Alan, let us talk a little bit about what's at stake tonight for both parties.
Well, there's a great deal at stake. Obviously, the who controls the presidency. Right now, of course, Trump in all the polls is way behind, or is 10 points behind. I think it's going to be a blowout. I've been saying that from the very beginning, but I may be wrong. The interesting thing to me will be whether the polls show any sense that the people who have supported him through thick and thin are willing to desert him over what we have just learned about his not paying taxes when they do. That's something. But the big thing that is coming out now is this $400 million, $300 million that he personally owes. And the question is, to whom does he owe it? There are many people who think that the Russians are involved in this. He has at least one child who said out loud, we can get all the money we want from the Russians. There's a question as to whether the Russians were helping with this Florida golf course. But, you know, that all has to be proven. The thing about the debate tonight is that Trump is going to do what he's always done. He's going to get up there. He's going to lie through his teeth. He's going to make up things. He's going to make up things about Hunter Biden. He's going to make up things about, Sleepy Joe. He's going to make up things that just as he goes along, because that's who this scoundrel is. And he is a scoundrel.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, the question to watch is how much will this really move the needle, regardless of how they perform? Yes. I mean, by most measures, Hillary Clinton won the debates against Trump 4 years ago, and she was leading up to a certain point. So it didn't propel him past her. It was other events and other things that happened, like James Comey, et cetera. But only 3 in 10 voters under an NBC News poll, anyway, say that it will have any influence on their decision. Usually, unless somebody really botches it badly, it doesn't have a lot of impact. You know, I guess Gerry Ford botched it when he said Poland was not under the Soviet rule and kind of dug himself in deep. But, you know, it's not necessarily going to make a big difference unless somebody really screws it up badly.
But Mike, isn't three out of 10 enough to win an election? You know,
every vote counts, right?
You're going to have 80 counts. Million people, they think, tonight watching this thing. If each of them talks to one other person and convinces them of something, it could mean a great deal. So a lot is at stake, and I hope Biden's up to it.
Yeah, the polls don't necessarily reflect the winner of the debate last night, and it makes a big change. But you're right, one percentage point here and there, and you have a different result.
Rosemary.
Well, my pessimism continues unabated. I think that Joe Biden, the one thing he needs to do, he has a lot of advantages going into this debate because of the New York Times and because of other little problems Trump is having, like how many people dead now are there? So he has a lot of ammunition. But the one thing that's going to go against him is Hunter Biden, and he's never answered that question correctly. He's never even done a performance related to Hunter Biden that was convincing to people. And he's had tons of time now. You know it's coming. He's got advisors smart enough. I want to see how he answers that question. And I am consumed this week by how Democrats and investigators have failed this country. It took the New York Times. It took reporters who are among the most denigrated down there with used car salesmen, most denigrated people in our culture, to bring out what's really happening in the Trump empire. Mueller didn't do it. A new book out by Andrew Weissman has shown how they just shied away out of fear of being fired, out of fear of their jobs. They shied away from it and could have had this at a prosecutorial level. And now we just have it anecdotally, when I think it's actually too late. And I would say the same with coronavirus. I'm very impressed with Olivia Troy, who did what I've been saying for a long time that Birch and Fauci ought to do, which is to quit and scream bloody murder about what's happening on the management of this pandemic. And instead, they're staying there trying to change it from within.
Birx isn't, according to that latest report.
Well, no, there's some reporting that she's told people she doesn't know how much longer she can stand and do it. She doesn't think she's effective. Yeah, you think. And then there's Redfield on the CDC, which has just gone into such decline. And the main reason that's being put out for not getting rid of him right now, he's ineffective as a leader, he's not protected the agency from interference by the White House, is that Trump could put in someone worse. What bad shape we are in, and how our regulators and our elected officials have failed to protect us.
Rosemary, could we go back to what you said about not having answered the Hunter Biden question correctly? What do you think the correct answer is that he should be putting out there?
I think he should immediately turn it back on Trump and his obnoxious, cheating, lying children. who have had actual court action against him. He has never done that. He's never said that he could just, he doesn't even need an excuse, Alan. He just needs to say, look, it's my son. Do you realize what that child has gone through? Yeah, maybe I overprotected him. Maybe that wasn't the best thing in the world, but he stood up for himself. He did the right thing when it was called out for him, and I can defend that. That's all he has to do. He is a man defending his children. Look how far Trump has gotten with that, and his children really are liars and cheats. They're not just taking advantage of their name.
Libby Post.
Well, now, I've been seeing some. First of all, I just want to say it's like old home week to be on with Rosemary and Mike and Alan.
Yeah,
so it's very nice to hear.
Great. It's so nice.
Yes, it's very nice. That's number one. Number two, I think that Trump will lose, not a lot, but there are some people, I've been reading some reports and seeing some stuff about people, his supporters who are like not happy with the tax stuff and may not vote for him because of that. I don't think it's going to be wholesale, so let me be clear about that right now. There are people who in his camp who don't believe in paying taxes. They're sovereign citizen types. They think that probably what he did is absolutely okay. But then there are other people who work hard, hate the same people that he hates, but still want to provide for their family and still do pay their taxes. And this may have a bad effect for some folks. And I think 20 to 30% might peel away. It's not going to be a wholesale thing, but 20 to 30% in some states could, you know, as Alan and Mike said, could make the difference. In terms of Hunter Biden, you know, I think Joe will do what he needs to do tonight and come out and say, this is my son. This is off limits. Congressional investigators and committees have found that there was no wrongdoing. This is all made up by your puppet masters in Russia. And, you know, hopefully he'll come out that strong. But it's a nothing burger. And as the folks from the Republican Party said about the tax story in the Times, that it was a nothing burger, Biden should say the same thing about the stories about his son. It's just that simple. It is a nothing burger. And Trump will keep going back to it and back to it. But I have to say, 200,000 people dead in the United States has a little more impact than Biden, Hunter Biden serving on some oil board somewhere in some part of a faraway country, you know, that people don't really know where the hell it is. So, you know, I'm feeling confident. I'm not feeling overconfident. But I think that Trump may very well start to self-destruct tonight. Because he's never been in a position like this.
I don't mean to. This is going to sound flip, but what does that look like compared to what we've seen?
I know. I mean, I'm hoping for a full-out meltdown is what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping for his trying to stalk Biden like he did on the stage with Hillary. I'm hoping for him to show his true colors and for him to go a little, you know, to go a little nutso. Or if he doesn't like the questions, walk out, just like he does at press conferences. So we'll see what happens. You know, it
can't
could
do
be
it.
Quite the show.
Can't do it. He's a lying liar. And that's what I expect tonight. He's going to make up all kinds of stuff, and he's going to say, and he's going to continue to do that. And as for the Hunter Biden thing, I like much of what you guys have said, but I don't know that you can avoid it by just saying he's my son.
Hmm. So what does he say?
Well, I think what he has to say is we all learn in life. We all learn lessons in life. It probably was not appropriate for him to be at that, to be there. But then you admit, and even if you admit, it creates some problems. So I'm glad I'm not Biden. I'm glad I'm not the president. The answer is I don't know.
But it is frustrating for that, Mike, right, for that to be the main point when you have 200,000+ people dead. You have a coronavirus that is largely being ignored. And it seems like with everything else going on, whether you want to make Trump's taxes a main issue or not, there's certainly more important things to talk about.
Well, that's what he should say.
I think he should hire you on,
Joe.
Ivanka and her licenses in China. Let's talk about the children, Mr. President. Yeah. I have some questions about your son. You want to talk about drug tests?
Well, no, you know, Rosemary, I think attacking the Trump children will be about as effective as trying to correct the misstatements that Trump makes. I mean, it'll just get bogged down very quickly. I think Joe's right. I think you should immediately say the real issue here is 200,000 people have died.
Sure.
Many because it was mishandled or whatever. He can't.
I think that should be the answer to every question. You know, what do you, whatever you think about. Yeah.
But you know, he's practiced.
I think Joe has to show some real feistiness here because Trump is going to do that. And he has to do it without getting mad like Trump does.
Right. I think he will. He's a seasoned debater. He's spent all that time in the Senate. He knows how to make people twist in the wind.
So what are the Hillary mistakes? Wait. What are the Hillary mistakes that Joe has to avoid?
We only have 40 seconds.
I'll,
go ahead.
I'll give you one, being Hillary. But otherwise.
That's so obnoxious, Alan.
But sorry. It's true. It's true, though, right?
No.
Yes.
It is.
Look, she is not warm and fuzzy. And she admits it. She's not warm and fuzzy. Joe is.
All right.
And that's the difference.
We're going to take a break and let some dust settle. When we come back, we will be back. We have letters. We want to hear what you have to say. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. And we welcome you to write in and sound off. We'll be right back after this.
Signs and wonders. All through the summer, oh, as the river has been drained of every drop. Take me under, gonna set my love asunder, and I just don't have the will to make it stop. Well, I see your face, and I know it's true. The good Lord up above is gonna see me through. And I got a revelation saying, Rob. Wonders. Signs and wonders, all through the thunder. Ah, and it strikes the earth and chars the grass and flowers. He's got my number, oh, but look over yonder. I know the sun won't set for many hours. Oh, but I see your face.
Betty Smith and the new album, The Good, The Bad, The Betty. playlist posted online, WAMC.org/roundtable. Great stuff this morning. It's 34 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Tuesday morning. It's the 29th of September, and we welcome you and your thoughts, panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. Some letters from folks. Irene says, I hate to disagree with Libby, but to me the difference between Hillary and Joe Biden is that Hillary is a woman. There are and have been plenty of not so warm and fuzzy men running for high positions in government that get elected. Libby.
Well, yes, there have been some not so warm and fuzzy men, but the threshold for men running and the threshold for women running still is very, very different. It is unfortunate, but just it is what it is. And so women are expected to be more warm and fuzzy and more approachable when they're running for office. And it's sexism at its best, but that is just the reality of what it takes now for people, for women to run. And so I mean, there are plenty of men. I mean, I don't consider Donald Trump warm and fuzzy, that's for sure. But Hillary...
Kamala Harris.
Yeah, right. I mean, neither is she, but... And Hillary, you know, I think one-on-one, Hillary was probably a very warm person. I mean, we just finished watching the four-part documentary about her and the race on Hulu. And on one-on-one, I think she was very personable and very warm. But to a crowd, there's not that connection. I've seen Joe Biden campaign, and he can connect with a crowd. And so can Trump, not on the warm and fuzzy, on the hate. That's how he connects.
Anybody else?
Anything else?
No, I think that's good. All right, let's go to Kevin, who says Biden needs to be open by addressing the audience and ask, have you ever played golf or tennis or pool with an inexperienced player? And how can that just throw off the whole game? That's what this debate will be like. Not sure I completely understand.
Biden has had that before with his Palin interview. He had to deal with, he had to be careful that he wasn't bashing a woman, the pretty little woman thing. And he had to deal with someone who was a lot less experienced both in politics and in debating than he was. And he did very well on that.
Yeah, I mean, even Trump is lowering expectations. I saw a clip today where he was saying essentially, you know, I'm not that good at this. I haven't done it in 4 years. He's been around a long time. He's done a lot of these. So he must see some advantage in trying to lower the expectations and blame any gaffes on the long-term Washington experience of politician, you know, Joe Biden, and make it a negative.
My favorite meme is that Biden ought to come out, skip the handshake, drop to the ground, and do 5 push-ups, and then say, okay, Trump, your turn.
Well, I mean, first of
they're
all,
not going to shake hands.
Any shake handshake.
Right.
Dropping to the ground might not be a bad idea. I
just hope he can get up.
Say, but it's gone.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I don't know physical activity in these debates. All right. Alan says, when they go low, we step on them. Who is Donald Trump to talk about other people's children? The Trump family is a mafia.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Alan, you with us?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'm listening.
I didn't hear you, and I was just worried we didn't have you. Okay. Lars said the tax story should be about who he owes. He is in deep debt. Who owes that debt? That is the question. Well, I assume that's going to come up, right?
Yes. Deutsche Bank and who owes the debt?
That's not going to show in those tax records.
Hold on. One at a time. Go ahead. One at a time. Libby, go ahead.
Deutsche Bank owns the debt, and what needs to be found out is whether or not Russia and the oligarchs put the security up for that debt, and which is what people have been saying for a very, very long time.
It is doubtful to me that tax records would have that kind of information. Now,
no,
I don't know what reporting the New York Times has done. But again, it is to me extremely disappointing that this was not something that the experts with subpoena power in the Mueller report did not go after. We should know this already.
Joe, we heard from James, who said, Joe should respond to Trump's attack about Hunter. My son pays his taxes, Jimmy.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
That's a very good retort.
Barbara asked the question, this is on the taxes, didn't our tax law allow him to pull off these financial shenanigans?
To a certain extent, that's true, and Democrats have promised a review, that comes later, but there's ample evidence that he took grandiose interpretations of existing tax code, kind of things that would be contested in court, and he could very well lose.
Go ahead.
They're civil violations, right? Your guest yesterday was phenomenal, David K. Johnston, when he explained it. I mean, these things are technically legal. You know, the $70,000 he spent for hairstyling when he was on The Apprentice, you know, that might get disallowed. He's able to claim it and then pick up a return, you know, pick up a refund on that. But if there's an audit, which there is, and they disagree, they can disallow it, and he has to pay it. So, I mean, it's like I'm going to take everything I can get, and then they'll try to get some back from me. I mean, it's a strategy that he did not create. He's just taking advantage of it and using every loophole to milk the system. And but, some people think
Mike,
that's great.
But, Mike, a lot of people go to jail for tax fraud. And the real question to me...
Republican have raised... I'm sorry, I keep talking over people because I can't hear you. I apologize.
What can we do to make you hear us?
I don't know. I think
talk
maybe I
it.
Can move to... Might be the noise, the ambient noise here. Sorry.
Okay,
sorry.
No, that's all right. Go ahead, Alan.
But what I was saying was a lot of people have gone to jail for misrepresentations and for lying.
Right.
Now, we know this guy's a lying liar. What makes us think that he won't lie to the IRS either and hasn't gone that far? And I thought your guest yesterday, Johnson, from what I hear about it, although I was, you know, not listening, to be honest with you, was that he thought that there might be some criminal activity here. And if there is, that may be why he's so worried about losing right now.
Oh, I think that that's exactly
one of the Republican senators raised an issue that I think is really relevant, which is why is this audit taking 4 years? Is the IRS treating him with kid gloves, avoiding going after him and looking into these things? Why aren't these issues settled? I've never heard of an audit that lasted 4 years. Have you?
No. Libby?
No. 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 The audits are wrapped up rather quickly, and he's been saying he's been under audit since before the 2016 elections. I can say as a business owner who, you know, has to pay taxes or not based on how well I do, there's only so long you can go claiming losses before the IRS says, okay, it's time for you to either turn a profit or close your doors. You can't do it forever. You cannot claim losses every single year and avoid paying taxes. You know, there are carryover losses that you from 1 year to the next. But after a while, the IRS says, I thought it was seven. Somebody said to me the other day it was 10. You know, my accountant had said it was seven, that you have to make a profit at some point. Otherwise, what's the use of you being in business? Really, what's the use of you being in business if you're not going to turn a profit? Is it just to hide your money, which is what Trump has done, if he really has any money, because he seems to be leveraged to the hilt. And I think what might happen is, you know, I've said this a couple of times, he loses, he resigns, Pence becomes president for a short period of time, Pence pardons him for everything on the federal level, he takes a nice long trip to Russia, and the AG in New York State can't touch him. That's all.
Alan?
I wouldn't doubt it.
Well, you know, I think that makes great sense. I just think what's going to happen here is that Trump has decided that I don't need advisors, I don't need to role play, I'm just going to do what I want.
Right.
And doing what he wants is to lie. And that's where he's going to get caught up short. You know, America now thinks of this guy as a bully and a liar, but also as a cheat. And
right.
that cheating is going to catch up with him.
Andrew writes, go ahead, Mike.
Oh, no.
No, go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say, Chris Wallace is the host tonight, the single questioner.
Terrific.
He will, I think he will call Trump on false assertions. And maybe not everyone, but I think it'll be pretty obvious if Trump tries to make outrageous assertions that Chris Wallace is there as kind of a real-time fact checker. I suspect that'll be the case, and that will be very interesting to see how he handles it.
He says no.
Go ahead.
He wants to be invisible.
I'm sorry. Say that again, Rosemary.
I said Chris Wallace himself says no. He's not going to do that. He wants to be invisible.
Is that possible at a debate like that? I don't know. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
You don't know how hard it's been just don't know how crazed I feel since you went away. You came to me, oh, before you left. Our lives laid over, our lives bereft. Stop that train and see me again. Stop these tears from the first time you went away. In your eyes there's goodbye, but you ain't got nothing to say. A whistle stop just to pass me by with a wave.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We were talking about the debate and, of course, Trump's taxes on Sunday when the New York Times released their first report on the president's taxes. They did say that there was more to come. Last night, about 9 o'clock, they did a second part of their investigation into the president's taxes. The headlines, if you will, that came out of that is that Apprentice celebrity fueled a myth that propelled him to the White House while President Trump was bragging on TV that he was a billionaire who had overcome financial hardship. Red ink was spilling from everywhere. His genius, it turned out, wasn't running a company. It was making himself famous, Trump-scale famous, and monetizing that fame. $427 million is what he got that fame ultimately gave him a lifeline to. And it wasn't just the show. The show, of course, paid him a good salary, but it was ultimately all of the other stuff that came with it. And the president seemed to be more than willing to take on those endorsements. Very strange, but anything that would pay anywhere from $100,000 to millions that he would take as a result. Any thoughts specifically on?
Yes,
go ahead.
Yes, I have a thought. I know you're not going to like this, but you're a genius. You put together this wonderful, wonderful program in the morning that so many people listen to, and you don't get $427 million for that. Something's wrong.
Hey, boss, can I have a raise? but, it's silly, right? It doesn't make any sense because, I have always believed that if you are, people say, oh, well, this person, this actor gets $13 million an episode. And I'm thinking to myself, well, if the network's making $500 million, then right. Yeah, the actor should make that much money. And so I've always felt that way. I don't know that that's necessarily the issue, as it is the fact that $427 million, and we touched on this yesterday, of how it is used, and then even though you have the money, you're still, as I just said in the New York Times, red ink is spilling from everywhere. It doesn't help anything.
I'm impressed that he has the nerve to do it. He would be a hell of a gambler. He is a gambler. Because I owe, a few thousand dollars, and I get sweaty palms thinking about it. And he's out millions, on the verge of billions. And he pushes himself out there as if he's a successful know-it-all. There is a certain genius there. I don't respect or admire it, but I have to admit it is there.
Well,
it's called hubris.
Well, and it's also called having the accountants and the lawyers to be able to do it, right? I mean, you have to build that case and feel confident about it. And I guess it's been successful if you can live that way for 15 years, if not all your life.
Well,
he's the most powerful man in the world, and he did that all on a bluff. That's some pretty good poker playing.
Well, Mike? Perhaps, but it also means he's a big, reckless risk taker. And
yep.
sometimes reckless risk takers win. But the one that got me in that story was how he was working for Unilever promoting all laundry detergent, and he would do cold calls on the media and tell them what a great product all laundry detergent is, and then he was selling Big Macs. I mean, that looks to me like, do you ever turn on TV late at night? You know, Alan, when you're watching those old Westerns and you see these burnt out old actors promoting things like reverse mortgages or Depend.
Well, actually, I like that one.
You like the Tom Selleck reverse mortgage commercial?
I like Tom Selleck.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Joe, if I see Joe Namath one more time, I'm going to jump out the window.
Well, these are, that's the pattern of a desperate person trying to cash in to make money because they need money. And that's what Trump seemed to be doing before The Apprentice kind of caught on. And then he got to spend a lot of money on his hair.
I want to know how you bring up a good point, because I think it was $100,000, right, for the all detergent. Am I right on that? And then
I think that's it. Yeah.
And then there was a great picture in the Times of him just holding like a great big laundry basket filled with clothes down Fifth Avenue, walking into the Trump Tower, which is just amusing. Not as amusing though of the licensing deal that he did with Serta Mattress, where he's talking to the animated sheep. Also a very funny image, but that one he got $15 million for Trump mattresses, and just think about that and try not to have a cold sweat.
You know, I don't remember seeing any of these commercials.
Me neither.
It's amazing.
Yeah. You probably...
And I watch a lot of TV.
You probably just tune them out.
Probably.
And honestly, I think a lot of them were commercials that were running during the show, were running during The Apprentice. Nick writes to us. Nick writes to us and says, "You guys still..."
Which I never saw.
Right. "You guys still don't get it. The average working class American in the pit of their stomach knows that there's something wrong with the traditional soul of this country, progressivism. Joe Biden may or may not be a progressive, but he certainly represents that side of the electorate. Therefore, in my humble opinion, he's going to lose big league."
I agree with that. I think that's correct. I think he's really going to get schlonged.
I think this guy is saying Biden's going to lose.
You thought Trump was going to get killed.
What'd you say?
Am I reading that wrong? I thought this guy was.
Hold on. Go ahead, Libby.
Yeah. This guy is saying Biden's going to lose.
Yeah.
Oh, he thinks Biden's going? No, I'm so sorry. Yeah, I got it wrong.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you're right.
Right.
All right.
I think Biden's going to win, and he's going to win big.
Okay, let's go to Rawl, who says, "Come on, panel, you guys are talking as if Trump does his own taxes. I would bet that Trump has never in his life done a tax form himself. His taxes are done by a professional tax preparation firm, which is hired to avoid paying whatever taxes they can avoid." I think I just said that, but okay.
But what difference does that make? He's still responsible for what they put down on paper.
That's right.
He's the one
exactly,
who's
and
right.
He signs it.
And he signed them.
Anybody who has an accountant knows, you tell the accountant what you've done, and you don't tell them any lies.
And
I think lies have been told here.
I think it's... Yeah.
And I think the accountants might be culpable, too, to be honest with you.
They may be. Yeah, they may
but,
be held in receipt.
Yeah, you can't look at this type for want of a better word, shenanigans, and say that it's all on the tax preparer, certainly.
No,
but
no, I think it's a combination of
hire
the accountants.
Like them to do my taxes.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I think it's a combination of all of it.
Already the Democrats have a digital ad out, saying, you know, that Trump pays less in taxes than somebody who makes a family making $50,000 a year. You know, in the Michigan and the Midwest in general, where Trump did better than expected last time and kind of got the election that way, I think that's going to, you know, really have resonance, you know, pointing out mm-hmm. that he escapes his responsibilities while they're paying, you know.
That's right.
Margaret writes to us and says, "I'm surprised at your optimism regarding the debate. Biden can't walk, can't talk, looks like a worn out old puppet. Who is responsible for disappearing that line of young, articulate, possible candidates from the political stage at the earlier debates? I'm afraid we are in for humiliation tonight." This seems to be something that people keep on coming back to. Certainly the Trump side does, but I don't I don't see it, and I don't think that it's fair. The events that I have seen Joe Biden do over the last several weeks since Labor Day have been very impressive, and I don't know where exactly that comes from. I don't know. And
it comes from the Democratic debates when he did look old and worn out and behind it against those young, vibrant Democratic candidates. But this is not the time for them. Trump has left this country desirous of a moderate, a warm-hearted, well-intentioned man with integrity. And that's probably Joe Biden.
And if that – go ahead, Alan.
I was just saying one thing real fast, and yet – you know, people may not have been impressed with him in the debates with Biden, but the fact of the matter is, Biden is the candidate.
Right.
He knew what he was doing. He's a moderate. And it's when you say, okay, do I have this radical guy, Trump, or do I want somebody who's responsible and moderate and employs moderation in his discourse? That's why I think that Biden's going to win. I think people are sick and tired of this other guy.
But go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say that one of the important things is that Biden doesn't just be the alternative to Trump and therefore think he's going to win the election. He needs to demonstrate that he has a plan, and he needs to demonstrate he's got the experience and the wherewithal to carry it out. The Washington Post did their endorsement editorial, did it kind of early. It's not even October yet, but I'm sure there'll be many more. And the whole point of it was, it isn't that situation where he's just any alternative to Trump. He is actually a guy that has a lot of experience, that has made mistakes and learned from his mistakes, and we will benefit from it if he's elected. That's the point the Washington Post made. And I think Biden needs to show that he is a very vital, active alternative to Trump, and not just, hey, vote for me, I'm not Trump. He can't come across that way.
But Mike, does he have to get in his face? See, I happen to believe at some point tonight, Biden is going to have to not get angry, but be very assertive when it comes to answering this guy. And I think that, you know, you can't say, okay, here's how I feel about health care and this and that. It's all important. But what really will give confidence to the American people, if he can stand up to Putin, if he can stand up to Duterte, if he can stand up to all, is that Biden makes it clear that he's not going to suffer this guy and allow himself to be pushed around.
I agree.
Yeah, he's got to do it with words, though, and not gestures and grimaces and threats.
You shouldn't look at his watch.
But no, we weren't. But see, none of that, like, I don't know. There's such a double standard of all the things that Biden can do, and then Trump can just do whatever he wants. And nobody says, you know, I know there's no fairness there.
He is a draft-dodging, tax-evading liar and cheat, and has risen to the highest ranks of power. Yes, he could kill somebody on Fifth Avenue and get away with it. Yes.
Valerie says, how much do you love your country if you're unwilling to pay your fair share of taxes to keep it and running, up and running? Hugging the flag just doesn't cut it. Marilyn.
Oh, he answered that. He said, you know, I'm smart.
I'm smart. That's right.
Right, right. And everybody, and by contrast, everyone who pays taxes is an idiot.
Right. And I think by saying I'm smart and I'm clever and the way I do my taxes, I think it's tacitly admitting everything in the New York Times was accurate.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. All right. One more letter and then we'll go to a break. Andrew says Biden should start with a moment of silence for the 20,000 plus who have passed. That is a good idea. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo. We will be right back after this.
Dream on when the working day is done. It's
6 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Tuesday morning. It's the 29th of September. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, and Mike Spain making up the panel this morning. A lot of letters and people sort of all over the board, so let's go to it. Michael said the so-called liberal media has for years been extremely pro-conservative. Anything a Democrat does is wrong, and anything a Republican does is right. Trumpism is just the most extreme example of this.
Which I say, what?
We go to Andrew. If Alan's comments about Biden being a moderate and not a puppet for the far left was widely believed, I think he would be a shoo-in for president. Trump supporters that I talk to don't think that Biden is in charge.
Oh, yes. Nancy Pelosi, AOC, those miserable women.
Right.
Tom says... Hey, please be a, this is for you, Rosemary. Please be a tad more informed before you throw out incorrect and hateful statements. Joe Biden had numerous deferments due to asthma, something that did not hold him back from being an athlete through high school and college, something he never mentions in his memoirs.
What did I say that was for me? I don't get it.
Because you called Trump a draft dodger.
Oh, he is a draft dodger. Bone spurs.
Right. So they're saying that the letter writer is saying that Biden is a draft dodger as well.
Well, it asthma people with asthma
same.
Can play
totally
sports.
The same.
Okay. What were you saying, Mike?
No, I was just saying that people with asthma, if it's under control and it's managed, can play sports. Perhaps they can also serve in the military. I don't know.
I haven't heard anyone talk about Trump's enablers, says Ken. Trump has been helped by the banks, the media, and yes, foreign powers, among others. But in the 1980s and 90s, his real estate holdings especially were propped up by banks who failed to hold him accountable. And since then, he's been given undue credibility by the media. We go to another debate suggestion for Biden, this one from Tom. Rather than wasting his time getting bogged down and refusing the numerous lies that Trump will be telling during tonight's debate, I hope Joe Biden simply says, that's a lie. Let's leave it to the fact checkers to set you straight and then go on to make his own points. He needs to do this every time Trump lies. By the end of the debate, it will have become an effective mantra and slogan for the Biden campaign. Let's see. Andrew says you need to watch more YouTube and Facebook ads with distorted footage to understand the Trump supporter impressions of Biden's frailty and mental quote unquote issues. Hopefully the debate tonight will clear up the falsehoods, but Fox and the commercial makers will be looking for any slip up to support their narrative. Let's see. And we go to Marilyn, who says the Repubs go crazy when a single mom on welfare, quote unquote, games the system. Where's their outrage now?
Very good point.
Rosalind says, I just hope Joe doesn't belabor the New York Times bombshell and sticks to what he intends to do with health care, infrastructure, jobs, the environment, etc. I'm interested particularly in what strategy Libby thinks he should employ. Go, Libby.
Tonight, I think that he should look straight at the camera. I think that employing the Reagan, there he goes again, might not be a bad idea. Just missing more information. I think he needs to point that out and then pivot to what he's going to do. Pivot to healthcare, coronavirus, taxes, rebuilding the economy. Look what we handed him in 2016, and look where we are right now. You know, we handed him a robust economy, and now our unemployment is through the roof and all the rest of that stuff.
So in other words, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?
That's right, right. And I think if he does the there he goes again, you know, which Reagan did, I think, to Mondale, I think that it'll just throw Trump off. And anything, I want to see him explode on the air. You know, I really, and I think that it'll undermine his credibility even further.
I think it's a matter of balance, don't you guys? In other words, yeah, you have to say what you want to do, but and that gives you a certain amount of, you know, terra firma credibility. But on the other hand, you know, the American people want to know that they don't have, you know, a an out of control liberal.
Right.
So they have to be able to. He has to be able to really, really tell Trump, nothing doing. This is out. You're outrageous. And where'd you get your money from, by the way? Where'd you get your money from?
Right.
And, you know, he can't be to the left. This is a center-right country. And we need to make sure we bring in those suburban housewives, or as Trump would call the suburban women, working-class white men. And he can't go so far to the left to give Trump, you know, the ammunition that he needs to undermine Biden's credibility. He needs to stay focused.
Well, I don't think he has. I don't think he has. I think that's been his whole approach.
He's got to stay that way.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it has worked for him. And
yep.
He just has to be careful that he doesn't disillusion the people who are on the left to think that he doesn't, you know, just if they don't vote for him and come out and vote, it could be dangerous for him. But I was just going to say he none of us are suggesting that he talks about the Supreme Court nomination. No. That is one advantage of this New York Times story. It seems like the big story all last week, of course, was Ginsburg,
right,
her passing, and the quick reaction of the GOP to fill the opening, you know, with Amy Coney Barrett. But it's hardly getting any attention now because everyone's talking about the taxes, and that might actually help Biden.
Yes.
I think asking political experts what should happen tonight is exactly the advantage that Trump is going to take advantage of, because he's not listening to them. He is a showman. He is listening to the rules of television. And I think he's going to zig where we're saying zag. If whatever Biden tries, if he tries to produce his own image of the future, Trump will attack that. If he tries to attack Trump, he'll bring up Amy Coney Barrett, which plays not to liberals, but it certainly does to conservatives. They've won a huge victory this week, and he's going to play that up. And I think that he is a formidable target, not because he's a good debater or definitely not a good person, but because he knows TV and he knows his audience.
Rosalind says, all right, I read that. I apologize. We go to Kathy, who says, if Trump loses, he'll be out there in the world in horrific debt and full of state secrets that other governments would be more than happy to pay for. Well, that's concerning, isn't it?
Yeah, but he never reads the intelligence reports. He doesn't.
Right, so he may not know. It's true.
I heard somebody said, sure. All right, let's go on to...
The one thing I would say is, again and again, he ought to be asked the question, who do you owe the money to?
Yeah.
I mean, because I think that is so important. And then, you know, get him on the record, say, oh, by the way, have the Russians given you any money for your golf clubs, your golf courses and the rest?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, and I would say it over and over again, because that's the way you win. You know, Libby has made a point over and over again, which I really respect. You know, people call her on it, but I think there are two things to be considered here. One of them is truth, and the other is how you play the game. And the game is played, if I'm hearing Libby correctly, differently than if you want to win on points for truthfulness. You just have to know what you're doing and do it well.
Right. 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 I mean, it is what it is, and you got to play the game to the best of your ability, recognizing that you need to be able to shift at any point. I mean, it really is, you know, the ability for some candidates to be so facile, and it's a skill, and I think Biden has that ability. I don't think Trump does. I think he's a one-trick pony. And he's constantly, you know, all he's going to do is insult, say you're wrong, go after. There won't be any truth to anything he says.
You know, it's a weird thing because Mike mentioned this earlier about the Washington Post doing their endorsement early. And people are voting. Early voting is open.
Right.
People are out voting now, which means that we have four more. I mean, we have four of these debates, three presidential, one vice presidential. And that just seems a lot. And it all is a bit, I'm not saying it's too much. I'm not saying we shouldn't do them. I'm just saying the timing is a little bit weird because you wonder how many people will have already voted by the time these debates hit the airwaves.
You're right. And it will remain to be seen. I'm really looking forward to tomorrow. I think it's not tomorrow night, next week's debate. I'm really looking forward to the Harris-Pence debate. I think that's going to be a great thing. Is it tomorrow night or is it next week?
No, it's the 9th.
9th, October 9th.
The 9th, October 9th. I am so looking forward to this. It's going to be great. And it remains to be seen if Biden's going to bring his wife onto the stage because, you know, he can't be in a room alone with another woman. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, you mean Pence.
But you know, vice presidential debates have not had any impact. I mean, that's what surveys and studies have shown. I mean, they're good entertainment. You know, the guy was running with Ross Perot, the general there.
Right.
What am I doing here?
Right. Right.
You know, I agree
with
Stockdale,
you, Mike. That's his name.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. Of course you're right.
It's good entertainment, but that's it.
But it is good entertainment.
Yeah. It's all kind of wearying, though, isn't it?
Well,
all right.
I guess.
Maybe I'm alone. Sort of exhausted by it all.
I'll be curious to see what the audience is tonight, what it is after the second debate and the third debate, you know. Of the presidential candidates, so there's supposed to be three, right. And I would not be surprised if by the time you know mid-October rolls around, hardly anybody's watching because most people have voted.
Unless you know, and then you have one. Unless there's something that happens, which inevitably will happen, and there'll be a major, you know, a tape or something, a surprise, and then people will tune in to see how it's responded to. But
yeah. I don't know if the. If Trump's going to have an October surprise, I think it's going to be more the New York Times, the Washington Post. They're going to have
yeah, they're going to have more
surprises. Yeah,
you know what's interesting is who are the two Trump advisors who've been in the room with him preparing, Giuliani and the man from Bridgegate from New Jersey. I mean,
right.
That really that's
Chris Christie,
sort of the bottom.
Yeah.
That's the bottom of the barrel.
Right. Bottom feeders.
He brought them out on Sunday during his as the story was breaking for the New York Times. Those were the three men on the stage.
I thought they were pretty good advisors. Christie had his Bridgegate, and it's very similar to this. He has to try to overcome it. And Giuliani is just a bulldog. He blasts on no matter
what.
He's
totally decompressed. Yeah.
So why are they good advisors, Rosemary?
Because they're totally in keeping with his style, pugnacious, on the offensive, and you don't admit wrong. Both of those did the same and actually ended up pretty well. Christie, you know, did not go to jail. He was never charged. Rudy Giuliani is still an advisor to the president. They've done well, and I think that Trump admires that and will copy that style.
For whatever it's worth, I don't agree. And, you know, it may not be worth anything. I think they both have terrible reputations. You ask Americans about them. Giuliani is not playing a major role in the Trump administration. He seems to really be hands-off and has some terrible accusations that have been leveled against him about his
Trump.
Yeah, please go ahead.
No, she said so does Trump. But I would assume that...
Immaterial to Donald Trump. And
as
so
you know,
far,
three...
he's banked on that one on it.
As you know, three wrongs don't make a right.
Well, also, I mean, we would assume that, right, Mike, if we're seeing a lot of Giuliani spending time with Trump and debate prep, that means that the issue of they're going to work very hard, as we know, on the issue of Hunter Biden. Right. Yeah.
Well, yes. And the important thing is that he is preparing and he is getting some help in preparation, even though he's portraying it as I'm not doing anything. I'm out campaigning. But in fact, he's boning up on all the points, just like Biden is. And, you know, we'll just see who is prepared better. And Rosemary's right. I mean, if you're going to go down low, who could better prepare you than Chris Christie and Rudy Giuliani?
Right.
Exactly.
Well, and that she's right.
I think those are the biggest hints as to what kind of stance and attitude Trump will take tonight.
Well, we will find out. Let's change the subject just a little bit and talk about voter fraud and what the Washington Post has found out. Courts view GOP fraud claims skeptically as Democrats score key legal victories over mail voting. For 6 months, the rules for how Americans can vote during the coronavirus pandemic have been locked in court battles while states across the country rush to embrace mail ballots. Now, with just weeks to go before the November 3rd election, voting rights advocates and Democrats have advanced on key fronts in the legal war, scoring victories that make mail voting easier, ensure votes cast by mail are counted, and protect the wide distribution of mail votes in some states. A review by the Washington Post of nearly 90 state and federal voting lawsuits found that judges have been broadly skeptical as Republicans use claims of voter fraud to argue against such changes, declining to endorse the GOP's arguments for dismissing them as they examine limits on mail voting. In no case did a judge back President Trump's view, refuted by experts, that fraud is a problem significant enough to sway a presidential election. That investigation from the Washington Post. Alan.
Well, I've been thinking about the judiciary a lot. You know, it was not supposed to be this way, obviously. Judges were supposed to give their views as to what the law said. We go back to the Nixon time, and he lost unanimously before the Supreme Court, including people who were appointed by Republicans. So that's where I am. Hold on a second. I have to get rid of this. Here,
but now I'm on the phone.
Yeah, we're getting...
It says, no, it said on the thing, spam risk.
Oh,
don't
yeah.
You hate that? Don't
that's
you hate
bad.
That? And I should learn to turn off the machine before I... Before I go,
that's
I apologize.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm worried about the judiciary, and I think the Supreme Court has become the third major branch of Congress, perhaps the third major branch of government, in that to have gone completely partisan. So you see, all these people are now saying put a term limits on the Supreme Court, maybe even elect the Supreme Court. I don't know, but. It certainly has cast some real doubt on the way in which judiciary and judicial review, not used in the usual way, occurs.
Mike?
Well, I was heartened by the Washington Post study because it did find that judges appointed by both Republicans and Democrats have been really dubious of the GOP lawsuits, and they have not agreed with the assertions made by the Trump attorneys and by the Republican Party that these are examples of potential voter fraud, and they're very skeptical. I mean, they question the lawyers and say, "Are there any examples of this?" Well, no, Your Honor. You know, I mean, they're and I I've said this before. I really am a believer that certainly. When Amy Coney Barrett gets in there, she's going to be a serious conservative who will have a lasting effect on the balance of the court. But I don't think that means that if the election were to go to the Supreme Court or there were issues, that she would skew it. I mean, I think judges generally, I don't even know how Gorsuch and even Kavanaugh would vote on cases where it's clear that there's not any voter fraud. Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito, they're kind of out in the ether. They'll always vote for Trump. But I don't know that the others will. I mean, I think they're capable of coming to a consensus that's the right answer. And so the story affirms that. Hopefully it's a good sign that judges, even if they're appointed by a Democrat or Republican, can be unbiased.
Well, not so fast.
Yeah, I know.
First of all, we know that the Bush judges may be following their leader as opposed to following, Trump. So in other words, just because you were appointed by a Republican, I suspect, and I think I'm right, that the Bushes hate Trump, and that has been transferred. That gives some K power, K for cojones, to the to the judges who were appointed by the Bushes. So the Republican and Democratic designation in some way breaks down here.
Ms. Gloom and Doom here weighing in. I read that article carefully, and while the headline was all very happy, the rest of the story is not. There are six states, including some of the biggest like Texas, where the laws have gone and the court rulings have gone totally on the side of, nope, we don't care about the pandemic, you have to vote in person, that's the way it goes. And the pattern has been that local officials and federal officials both are loath to make any big changes in the voting laws. The state courts have been good, but not the federal courts. And where is Trump going to take all of these appeals, the ones he really cares about, to the federal courts that he has had now appointed 300 judges? So I found that article a lot more gloomy than the headline did. And yes, the courts have said there's no proof of fraud, but they, despite that, have said there's no reason to change the rules that have been in place for a long, long time. And that, to me, is even worse. If not to change them now in time of a pandemic, when to ever do it? And they're not changing them. That article was extremely gloomy. Even the numbers, the Post went through every court case that they could find involving voting and voting procedures. And there's still 300 that haven't come to fruition. So the whole balance could change like as soon as they're done. But even in the ones they looked at, the 90 cases, overwhelmingly, there were not big changes. The headline to them was, oh, yeah, the court's not buying this fraud business. But you know what the real story is? You don't have to sell them fraud to get them not to go along with the change.
Yet, and you know, that's all good points. Did we not hear Trump bragging that he wanted his appointee to the Supreme Court because she would vote for him were it to come down? I mean, that's an extraordinary sense that, you know, these judges are nothing but, followers of the people who appointed them. And that would be very bad.
Mm. Let's see. We have just about a minute here before I have to take a break. So let me see if I can get to letters. Tim said, speaking from personal experience, asthma is a disqualification from all of the armed services. I was not allowed to enlist in 1976.
Yeah, my son had asthma and wanted to enlist and could not. So I don't count that in the same category as bone spurs. He still has the asthma. They didn't magically disappear like burns.
Right. That's the point. The point is you got asthma or you don't. Do you have a bone spur or you're just claiming a bone spur because your father knows the doctor?
Now, the bone spur just miraculously went away just the way that the coronavirus will, Alan.
Yeah, I get it now.
It's all,
now I see, Mike.
All hard to keep track of.
Sarcasm alert.
All right. Sarcasm alert. Sorry.
All right. We're going to continue when we come back. We'll do our last go-round with this panel, and we welcome your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Libby Post, and Rosemary Armeo making up the group. And again, we welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org.
What's that I hear you say? All she ever did was take. You don't know what I saw in her, but there's a point I gotta make. Sis, I didn't see you around when I felt so alone. She's the one who was there for me. I couldn't make it on my own. So don't you mess around and let this woman be torn down. Cause she was looking out when you could not be found. She was right on time. She was a friend of mine. So don't you mess around. She was a friend of mine. No, you wouldn't judge her. You were never in her place. And I know that you would fail if you stood here face to face. There's no trying to convince me of what I should believe. She's the one who gave a damn, and I could never leave. So don't you mess around and let this woman be torn down.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Making up the group this morning, Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let's go on to some other stories here in our last go around. We only have about 15 minutes left. So we go to the question of the credibility of the CDC. The CDC's credibility is eroded by internal blunders and external attacks as coronavirus vaccine campaigns loom. For decades, the agency stood at the forefront of fighting disease outbreaks. This time, it's dealing with a crisis of its own. Again, this from the Washington Post. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention was created to stop deadly pathogens. It battled malaria and polio. It helped eradicate smallpox. It sent intrepid disease doctors to Africa to fight Ebola. Over the course of seven decades, it became the world's most admired public health agency. The CDC had been preparing for decades for this moment, the arrival of a virus rampaging across the planet, inflicting widespread death and suffering. But 2020 has been a disaster for the CDC. The agency's response to the worst public health crisis in a century, the coronavirus pandemic, has been marked by technical blunders and botched messaging. The agency has endured false accusations and interference by the Trump administration and political appointees. Worst of all, the CDC has experienced a loss of institutional credibility at a time when the nation desperately needs to know whom to trust. This harsh assessment does not come from political or ideological enemies of the CDC. It comes from the agency's friends and supporters, and even from some of the professionals within the agency's Atlanta headquarters. Jody Lannard is a physician who works for nearly two decades as a pandemic communications advisor consulting the World Health Organization, and says since late February, the CDC has lost massive amounts of credibility. All right, who would like to begin?
I'll take a shot at it.
Sure, go.
I was just going to say, it's tragic that this credibility has been so compromised and so quickly. It just shows you how difficult it is to earn a reputation, how easy it is to lose it. And for all the reasons cited, it's been attacked from within, it's caved in, it's made some tactical errors too, that happens. But then it's tragic because it is going to be needed to give people confidence when there is a vaccine. Trust of a vaccine is going to be essential to the success of a vaccine and eradicating this horribleness that we're all going through. And if they look to the CDC and they say, I don't know, they're saying it's okay, but they're kind of, it's just going to hurt. You need to have somebody you trust in. And that's all we've done for the last 4 years, or longer than 4 years. Don't just credit Trump on this one. We've torn down the things that we had come to trust. And this is going to have huge ramifications. It's tragic.
Alan?
What Mike said. he's exactly right. One nuance that does seem clear to me, and that is that people like their director and others seem to have been more outspoken now than they were in the beginning. They just stood there like, stones or stumps in the beginning. But I do think they know their credibility is at risk here, and they have come forth and done what they need to do. I know that Rosemary has quite often spoken about the need when you're in a bad administration to resign, and she herself has said, well, what the problem is that they'll get somebody worse, and that's right. So the CDC is very important, and think about this. This is going to cost lives, right? I mean, there will be people who will not take the vaccine based on the distrust of the people who are supposed to be overseeing all of this. Now, I don't think a lot of people will take it as long as Trump is the president. But after that, it will have recurring problems.
Rosemary?
I think there is a need, a great need in the United States for bravery, for leadership, for people to stand up and say, this isn't right, and I'm going to point it out to you. And I saw that with Yvonne Troy, who is a scared little woman, really, from Texas, a lifelong Republican, loves Mike Pence, thought she was in a dream job, and she stood up and said, this isn't right. And that took incredible courage and bravery, and I don't even know if it'll have an effect. She's now working for the Biden campaign, so she's trying to have an effect, and I think that's most any of us can do. And so I differ greatly from Alan on this. I do not think Fauci has lived up to the potential of what he could do, and Birch really makes me disappointed. She firmly believes that working quietly will win out the day, and Wright will come out, and Redfield too, who is a very respected doctor, although not a leader of an agency. They're all overwhelmed by the machinery, and they're losing. And don't they see that? And the result is that you end up with the IRS is now in question, the CDC, the National Weather Service. What's happening?
The FBI.
Yeah.
All of these agencies are going to. So Trump is winning. It's not as if they're the first ones. They're not even the pioneers. They have to do what's brave. I'm sorry. I just don't think any job is worth seeing the institution that you fought your whole life for go down in flames the way it is for Redfield. And yes, he will put somebody worse in there. I think Scott Atlas will go in, who is a monster. He has no business at all doing epidemiological studies. He knows nothing about it. But is it better that he stays and then does everything Trump tells him to do? Trump's not even a doctor. I think it's time for the brave and dramatic action, and I would really love to see it happening more often.
Well, right of reply, if I may.
Yes.
I truly believe Rosemary has a point about why some people should get out and some people should have more courage. But I think if there's one thing we know about Fauci at this stage is that he has tremendous courage. He had the courage to stay and to talk and to say where he disagreed with the president. And he said it over and over again. And the American people, by the way, know that. And they have given him a huge send-off in the polls. So so I think Fauci deserves whatever medals there are. And we just don't agree on that. I don't think he had any business resigning, because once you're out, you're out. Nobody wants to listen to you.
There was a disturbing, I thought anyway, disturbing article in the Times last night about the White House effort to pressure the CDC on school openings. And the that effort included Deborah Birx, the White House's coronavirus response coordinator, who worked very hard to try to get certain reports in that said, hey, look, we want to we have to open the schools. Even though all of the science was saying you probably shouldn't, and these are very, very important concerns, and yet it's what the president wanted, so that's exactly what they did. Dr. Birx took a direct role in an effort to push the CDC to incorporate work from a little-known agency inside the Department of Health and Human Services, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. The document worked on by the mental health agency struck a different tone from the cautious approach being proposed by the CDC, warning that school closures would have a long-term effect on the mental health of children. It said that very few reports of children being the primary source of COVID-19 transmission among family members have emerged, and asserted that children who were asymptomatic are, quote, unlikely to spread the virus.
I don't know that she deserves it or not, but I think she's going to go down in history as a collaborator.
Yep, I agree with you, Alan.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's true or if it's right or not, but with this kind of reporting, it's certainly yes, right?
Yes. And I agree with Alan's take on Anthony Fauci. If he didn't stay inside, his voice would not. I mean, I think this man truly believes in public health and in science. And he right now is the only voice within the administration talking that way. I mean, you know, Kayleigh McEnany said, oh, the president believes in science, and we all know that that's not true. But I think Fauci needs to stay there and do whatever he can, because he truly believes in public health, and he is truly concerned with the health of every single American, because he knows, look, 200,000 people have died.
I don't see the distinction
in this
between
country.
Birch and
Hold
Fauci.
On. Go ahead.
Yet we're vilifying one and not the other. How do you reckon that, Libby?
I think there's a distinctive difference between Fauci and Birch.
Birx is an apologist for Trump. Fauci is not.
Mike?
No, I think you're right, Libby. I agree with you completely. There's been documentation about how Birch has tried to, ingratiate herself to the Trump people with the hope of trying to lead them along, but really not being successful.
Right.
And it has backfired on her, and her credibility's been trashed. Fauci's credibility continues to soar because he has not wavered, and he still is out in the public. He's on podcasts. He's on all kinds of interviews in print where he's talking very openly and frankly, and the man is using his experience and his lifelong credibility to say the right thing and to be a leader in a very, very, very difficult time. And I agree with Alan. Once he's out, he's just, I can't even remember the name of the woman from Texas on Pence's staff who said Trump talked so derogatorily about people, dirty people. And, that was a one-day story. Trump, if Fauci quits, he'll be a one-day story. He's still there doing the job, and he'll continue to do it probably in a very open way if Trump does not win re-election under the Biden administration.
Right. He's 79 years old.
Right.
Which is 79 right. years old, and he walks 4 miles a day.
I'm seeing parallels.
No longer jogs, yeah.
Reminds me of somebody I know.
Right.
Yeah.
But this is a man during the AIDS crisis that stood up and said, gay men in this country are citizens and need science to help them cure this disease. And look how far we've come because of his initial work. You know,
Redfield was a champion in the AIDS crisis as well.
Yes, he was.
But neither of them has measured up, in my reckoning, in the coronavirus.
You have a very high standard, Rosemary.
I do. And boy, nobody's meeting it.
There's no sense belaboring the point. I just it seems to me that when you look at it, to Mike's point, Fauci's all over the place talking and going after Fox News and going even after the president's recommendations and he's doing that all from the inside. I don't know how you beat that.
Right.
He's not touchable. See, they can't fire him. Trump can try to disassociate himself with him, but he cannot fire him under the structure. And he has not been able to pressure him out. And by not taking the pressure that's obviously been laying heavy on him, he has proven to be a hero to me.
All right.
It's like Sessions. It's like Jeff Sessions.
Oh, hardly. Jeff Sessions was a jerk.
No, I said the way he couldn't be
efficient. And he's out of there.
Oh, my. Well, there you go. What a great way to end on. Mike, wine of the show. Thank you. My thanks to everybody. Rosemary Mayo, Libby Post, Mike Spain. Alan, thank you very much. Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks, boss. Good.
All right. Be well. We'll talk to you later, and we'll be right back with the Congressional Corner after this.